Welcome to The Vinyl Preacher, your weekly podcast where we talk about the Bible and make a playlist. I'm Matt Cadle, pastor at St. Mark's Lutheran Church in Los Angeles, California.
And I'm Zach Paris. I'm the pastor of Lutheran Campus Ministry at the University of Colorado Boulder.
Well, Zach, the Super Bowl happened, and it was quite a game.
Wow, what a game that was.
And what a halftime show. I mean, just...
Wow. Just Pepsi, huh?
Pepsi has taken over the Randy's Donuts sign.
Are you serious? Is it a giant...
Pepsi. Yeah, painted in the Pepsi logo.
Dang, smart.
And it says donut drops on it. And there's like, I've seen photos of Pepsi donuts. I don't know what any of that means. I don't know if it is. I don't know. And I only wish that I lived 5 minutes from Randy's Donuts so I could go get answers to all of my questions.
Is Randy's Donuts on the way to the Super Bowl site?
Yeah. Yeah, it's...
You could tailgate with Randy.
Always. Always up to no good. It's, yeah. Randy's...
Wow. Favorite. How about that? We had that great Vinyl Preacher live hangout during the halftime show on Zoom that was attended by literally...
Thanks for coming, everyone.
Literally thousands. We raised a ton of money for a number of...
Maxed out our Zoom limit. Like, we couldn't let any more people in because... Yeah.
Patreon, like... We are the top Patreon on Patreon.com now, both in number of sheer givers and gross profit. So thank you.
Incredible stuff. What a time. What a time. And we'll look forward to talking more about it. Incredible stuff. What a time. What a time. And we'll look forward to talking more about it. Incredible stuff. What a time. What a time. And we'll look forward to talking more about it. Incredible stuff. What a time. What a time. And we'll look forward to talking more about incredible stuff. What a time. What a time. And we'll look forward to talking more about that incredible stuff. What a time. What a time. And we'll look forward to talking more about incredible stuff. What a time. That's right. That's absolutely right, Zach. Plus, we have to make time to cover one of our other favorite things to watch on television.
Number one, The Righteous Super Bowl. Number two, Righteous Gemstones. We're caught up, Matt, you and I.
I know, finally caught up. Took a while. I don't know. How many episodes are left? What's the season like?
I have no idea. How many episodes have we watched?
I don't know. Like six, five?
Six, five. That feels right. I feel like five is the right number currently. Spoilers. We're probably going to talk about a spoiler or two because there is a
if you're
shocking
not
twist.
Up,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They're definitely a shocking twist. So before we get, and then we have like some macro thoughts too. So can we talk about just highlights of any highlights from the season so far? And then we'll talk about the shocking twist and then just macro takes on the season and the show. How does that sound?
Sounds great, man. Sounds great. The things that I like so far, number one, I'm an Eric Andre fan. I do appreciate his absurd version of comedy. I like the absurd comedy stuff. Sometimes he's a lot to take, like the Eric Andre show, not necessarily a thing I really enjoy because you need like 15 minutes of it. And it like, wow, how about that? You don't need like repetitive hours of his comedy, but he's in here. He's Lippman. Is that his name? The Lippmans?
I think so. Yeah.
The Texas based.
It's Listens, I think. The Listens. Then they make a joke about listening.
You're right. The Listens. They're full of jokes. I love that they are the mega, they're the Joel Osteen ostensibly of this universe as the official Texans, right? I am disappointed that the Listens claim the West because I feel like there's a whole Saddleback angle that has not yet been covered by the show. And that's missing. And there's a hole in my heart for you and for me and for all of us.
I hope that's season three. Saddleback. Yeah. Come to California. Yeah. It's pretty great. They're trying to get a Christian timeshare started.
There's nothing Christian about timeshares.
How would you like to go to the beach with Jesus Christ? Just incredible stuff. Loved it.
Oh my gosh. It's so good. I was so excited for and then disappointed. Is it Jason Schwartzman who's the investigative reporter?
Like one episode.
I know. I was like, oh my gosh, I love Schwartzman. He's going to do an amazing like Rushmore style like thing here. And then he's no longer in the show, friends.
Nope. Mm-hmm. Nope. They took him out in a pool of blood that is still not resolved. But there's a big mystery at the heart of the show right now. It's still not clear what's going on. I can't even remember the context for some of these, but some of my favorite quotes: boomers, most selfish generation to ever live. Sorry, boomers, we love you.
We're glad you're listeners of the podcast. And one of the ways that I'm you sure prove your lack of selfishness is your generous contributions to our Patreon, and we appreciate you.
That's right.
That's why our top tier givers on Patreon are called boomers, because of respect.
We look forward to the millennial quotes that will cut us right to the core. When Jesse, right? Jesse is, he says to his son, "You want to be a preacher, right?" so good. And then Jesse's constant use of the phrase, Christian thought leaders. We're the new generation. Christian thought leaders. And I literally, like, it was like in my time, Synod Assembly has been full of like thought leaders. Yeah. We're going to have thought leaders do some speaking.
Oh, yeah.
It's just incredible to have Christian thought leaders. I love it.
I just love the phrase muscle mans.
Muscle mans.
You and your muscle mans.
Yeah, the really strong Jesus, strength above all else, which is like a quote from the Psalms or something. I don't know. It's like, I should have looked it up to see what it was. But it's great stuff.
Oh my gosh. All of the Christian basketball leagues, the Christian sports come to fulfillment in the God Squad.
The God Squad. There's like a youth group meeting where like they just watch the muscle mans like do, I don't know, muscly things. Like this is their youth group.
Have you not?
Incredible stuff.
I know though, the youth gathering is off now. That probably gives us enough time, Matt, to get our God Squad together. So the next youth gathering, wherever it may be, I haven't heard, tens of thousands of youths can watch our God Squad do muscle mans things.
Love the quote. That's the Lifetime made for TV movie version. What I'm trying to get to is the Ken Burns real deal, which just incredible stuff. I'm married to a historian who is really not a fan of Ken Burns. So to hear that lifted up as the pinnacle of truth telling is just incredible.
I really enjoy. There's so many, Matt, there's so many things that I really enjoy. The thing that made perfect sense, things that made that just make sense in your TikTok language, is the John Goodman backstory as a professional wrestler makes so much sense. Like that's exactly right.
Yep.
Like that's right. I didn't know that's who he was, but that is definitely who John Goodman's character was.
Yeah.
It's a perfect mix.
Yeah. It's brilliant. Yeah. The showmanship, all of it. Yeah.
I love the follow up on, what's his name? Cy Burns.
Jesse.
Is that Jesse? Jesse and his wife are leading like the couple's like marriage, like recovery Bible study, which is like follow up from last season where like, his friends are all like, "Yeah, Jesse, I'm not allowed to hang out with you without other people around," and stuff, right? Which is, there's almost every episode they cut to the Bible study with all the people working on their marriages, and it's hilarious because they're real bad at not helpful. But the best part is after his wife like shot the motorcycle ninja mans, like everybody's like, "She's great." We love her. And Jesse's getting mad. And he's like, "Don't forget, you guys are here because your lives suck and you screwed up your marriage." And then he hosts a secret, like, "Hey, I invited all the men from the marriage group to a secret, like, Save yourself, man thing, where we're gonna take these sling. Oh my gosh, the no, game of David Slingshot, guys. You're throwing pebbles at that bad dude.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He somehow orders scientifically accurate slingshots. David Slingshot that they all get.
And they're just and
just incredible, like slow motion imagery of them all like swinging these.
And they all walk backwards at the same time. Amber Gemstone, Amber and Jesse. Oh my gosh, that was so good, man. So good.
I wonder what you thought of this line. They're from Asheville. They hate God.
Will Rose texted that to me before I saw the episode because it was such a. That's 100% true. 100% true.
100% true.
That is what their people would have thought. Which brings us to definitely the greatest visual episode of the podcast of the series, which is BJ's baptism. Number one, I'm all in on the font. I think the font is fantastic. I would love to have that font in my life. I think there's stuff worth exploring in the baptism of BJ, because especially for like Lutherans, Episcopalians, we don't baptize very many adults. While they made choices for BJ's baptism that I wouldn't necessarily make, it is an investigation into what might be possible in celebrating adult baptism. And it is definitely, a thing I'd not considered as a baptismal romper, but I'm going to recommend it to now all my adults today with a cummerbund.
I mean, there's a changing of clothes, you know, a changing of clothes. Which is why that says you look like a man worthy of respect. In all seriousness, which is great. His family doesn't know what to do with him post baptism, mm-hmm. which is just, again, it's a parody, and yet there's lots to unpack there.
Oh, it's lavender, the romper, which is kind of like butterfly colors. It you think of Laudette Sunday, right? With the pink and there. I mean, that's very Eastery, man. Fun fact, mm-hmm. if you did not know, you should know that BJ's sister is his fiance now. They just got married this past weekend. This is real life wife. So that was pretty fantastic. I enjoyed the Christian persecution complex that Judy had. yeah. Where the family really was like – seemed to be pretty like supportive of everything, like some pretty insane right, things yeah. happening. And she's just supportive, yeah. just insulting them at every turn because she feels like they hate her. So that was pretty fun.
Yeah. Incredible stuff. And then, yeah, there's a twist at the end of that last episode.
Oh, man. Is it though? That's the question. So here's the big spoiler.
Yeah.
It appears that the ninja motorcycle men, which is used gender neutrally in the Righteous Gemstone universe because of cultural context, it appears that they gunned down John Goodman's character, Dr. Eli Gemstone. He appears to be dead at the end of the last episode we saw.
Yeah, I can't imagine. Like, it's so hard to imagine. I mean, the show, like, does things you wouldn't predict, so maybe. But he's so good.
He's so good.
I can't imagine them giving up his character.
Right?
I could imagine them, like, putting him in a coma for a while. Like, I could see how that would make narrative. But, man, to just kill him off. Ooh,
I mean, they've done a pretty good job, though, Matt, in terms of, like, is it Amy, his wife,
Amy Lee,
who's never been alive during the time period of the show, pretty present, right? Yeah. And you get especially this season, a lot of performance out of Amy Lee, so it doesn't preclude Dr. Eli Gemstone being a big part of stuff going forward. But
yeah,
wow. I mean, this does support the theory, Matt, that the listens are behind it. That's the theory that I've been compelled by most recently because, as you recall, the listens and Jesse and Amber Gemstone fall out when the listens realize that Jesse and Amber don't have any money and can't help make Beach with Jesus happen. That's their falling out. And one of the key lines is that Jesse says, oh, I just gotta wait. Once my daddy dies, then it's all gonna be my money, and like I'll be in charge. So this might be the Listens killing all these people in order, or killing Eli at least, in order to free up the cash to make the Jesus timeshare happen, which is what the Lord would want, I suspect.
Wow. Yeah, that would tie together.
They did a good job with Eli's death too, because he goes to Kelvin. Because, of course, Kelvin has his thumbs broken by Dr. Eli Jimstone at BJ's baptism when he can't get his God Squad, his muscle mans, into the reception. And he gives a really heartfelt, like, apology and stuff, you know, to his son. And then his son's mean to him, and then not good.
Yeah. Yeah, brutal, brutal way to leave it. Oh my gosh. So how do you feel about second season versus versus first season? Thematic shifts.
Thematic shifts. Well, Matt, I don't feel like there's been as much for us to talk about in terms of us being like a churchy liturgical preaching podcast. Because I do feel like the first season was, let's set up this landscape of the like kind of like evangelical televangelist prosperity gospel world. And so we got to like explore all those nooks and crannies and see them like revealed in this light for the first time. And there's been less of that. It's more, this season feels like much more of like a story set within the world that they built for us. And so really kind of outside of like the baptism of BJ, which was fantastic. I don't feel like there's been as much for us to like tease out and stuff, you know, that the backstory about a wrestler, that Baby Billy, who we haven't even talked about, serial
Uncle Baby Billy.
Uncle Baby Billy. Oh my gosh. When his baby's mama is calling the police and they're like, no, his name's Baby Billy. He's 65-year-old man. He's not a baby. It's just his name's Baby Billy. Maybe he's gonna come. He's gonna come back anytime now with just a car full of Funyuns. Oh my gosh!
Gosh.
Are we gonna see? I think we're gonna see Harmon at some point. I feel like.
Yeah, I'm interested to see where that goes too. Like when they introduced him, I was like, "Where? How are they gonna pull this around?" I wonder, like, cause I see that too. I feel like there's such like just all of the weird, twisted family dynamics and backstories. Like it all feels very Book of Genesis and Old Testament to me, right? Like it feels like, which
are you trying to tie this into a little thing we call time for the text, where we get Joseph
get
and the brothers?
I wasn't going there yet, yeah. But but you know, I mean, not to go down another rabbit hole, but we've had conversations about in this country about banning certain books because they're inappropriate for children. And then of course people share these memes like, you know, if you're uncomfortable with that, you might want to read Genesis again and see some of the stuff that shows up. And I think that's a pretty good, like, that's some of what's happened, you know. It's like, yeah, pretty, pretty messed up humans. So you've got a pretty low anthropology. This is actually a much more accurate Christian show.
Matt, I did something I was ashamed of this morning. You reposted a memory about the Enneagram and it drew me out of the shadows on Facebook, Matt. And I put a smart remark in the comments of your reposting. And then I deleted it. Cause I'm like, I've got too much going on today to poke fun at the Enneagram, but I'm here on the podcast, which is, if it's nothing, it's a vehicle for poking fun at the Enneagram. But I kind of feel that way. Like that is a substantive critique I have of the Enneagram, right? Is that like, I don't know that like we need to make up all these like numbers and like stories and stuff when like there's already this book about personalities like that, like they get told over and over again that these dynamics that are not that if you're looking something for a text about the essence of what humans look like and what our anthropology, what our humanity looks like, then we've got a book like that. And it's messy and nowhere near as much fun as doing a personality quiz and getting a number at the end of it. But it might be more accurate.
Yeah.
I'm a Uncle Baby Billy. Sure. That's the next time somebody asks me what my Enneagram number is. I'm going to say, well, I'm an Uncle Baby Billy. I'm always on the search for Funyuns.
Oh my gosh. Incredible stuff. Yeah. Like I think it points us back to Genesis. And then just such good stuff. Like, I mean, if there is an exploration of contemporary religion, I feel like this season even is doubling down even more on some of the masculinity and ego, like, and just the way that gets played out in these weird different ways, right? These just incredible from the muscle man's to, you know, Jesse's just constant, like, he reminds me of, like, he's like a Will Ferrell, like Talladega Nights character, like, but mm-hmm. taken to this, like, HBO extreme. Like, it's like that similar kind of, like,
yeah.
And then even to John Goodman's character, right? Where like you drew that perfect connection where, like, yeah, he's like a former wrestler and all this showmanship and everything. And then he does seem like there's a lot that we'd say is messed up about how he chooses to live as Christianity. And yet he does seem to be, like, trying to live this upright life with all these messed up sons, like the sons of Eli. Right. Yeah. So,
I mean, there's that line where he's like that last scene, part of what made it so affecting, where he is with Kelvin, where he talks about, like, I used to be like, your mother changed me, and now I'm worried that I'm becoming who I used to be. Super. How honest is that, right? Like that.
Yeah.
I thought that scene, and then the scene, I think one of the secretly, like, super honest scenes that I recognize was the Uncle Baby Billy flashback to Christmas, where he's left the mom in Harmon, and he's telling the story of what happened, and he's telling it so well that she left him, right? And, like, that if you didn't have, like, we would have, like, tells the hell out of that story, right? And and we're all sitting there knowing he's lying through his teeth, right? And, like, how many pastoral conversations have you been in where that's the dynamic, right? The vibe, like, this is what's happening. And you can, I think, after a while, like, start to identify, like there's enough there to, like, see through it. But how, like, and then, like, he gives it up immediately, you know, like when Amy Leela calls him out on it. And how many times do we tell that story ourselves, you know, to just the complete opposite story and try to say it. And you can almost hear him, like, saying it passionately enough that, like, he telling it so hard because he also wanted to believe it, probably.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Wanting to change it by how we tell the story. So.
Yeah, they've done such an amazing job with this character. Like, even more this, where it's like, I mean, he's completely ridiculous. You wouldn't approve of most of his actions, and yet it's, like, really poignant. You're like, this is a really human character. So,
oh my gosh,
good stuff. Check it out, listeners, if you haven't already.
And we talked about it a lot during the Super Bowl halftime, so that was good conversation.
We did. So I'm sure we'll continue to cover that as the season.
I look forward to our next Vinyl Preacher Happy Hour, brought to you by our Patreon subscribers, where we gather the next generation of Christian thought leaders to get together on Zoom and just dream up new visions for ways that Jesus might greet us on the beach. Who's the celebrity that they talk? Is it a Jonas brother? Is that?
It's like Joe Jonas.
Joe Jonas. Yeah, I didn't. Yeah. Hannah had to explain who that was. That's a fantastic touch as well.
Yeah. And they're so impressed. Like, they still want to be friends with Jonas.
Oh my gosh,
brother.
Right? Like, and that's, I mean, that's like, let's get Rob Saylor back on the podcast to talk about, like, Christian rock versus, like, regular rock, right? Like you get that whole, you get all of Judy's, like, Christian persecution complex going on with BJ's family, and then as soon as Jesse and Amber are near, like, a real celebrity, like, we've got to be friends, like, we've got to assemble, like, this is what we really want.
right.
You yeah. know, we can
yeah.
use this.
Yeah, right. No, you're right. Yeah, because he's always talking about Hollywood, and then there, there's actual Hollywood. They're so excited.
It's for us.
Wow.
Wow. But speaking of messed up families, man.
Genesis 45.
Whoa. Who forgets Genesis 45? No one.
Good stuff. One of my favorites. Joseph. Joseph. So here we're at kind of the tail end of the Joseph narrative. So hopefully you know the backstory. If you don't, go back and listen to our multiple summers of Genesis. but at this point, Joseph, I mean, it is important to understand. The last time Joseph's brothers have seen him alive, they threw him into a pit and left him for dead.
Which is...
Or at least decided then to sell him into slavery. Very
likely to happen in the remaining episodes of The Righteous Gemstones.
Yeah. Yeah. They think he's dead. They haven't seen him in a long time. He's gone on his whole journey. And now... Lo and behold, they're coming in to him with hat in hand. They are in need, and they have come to Egypt, where Joseph is one of the people in charge. But apparently they don't recognize him first because it's been a while. And he's probably grown a mustache or something. And so Joseph says to his brothers, I am Joseph.
Cool.
Big reveal. I am Joseph. And then he says immediately this, is my father still alive?
No, just, some ninja man's on some ninja motorcycle man's gunned him down.
Oh my God.
Bad news.
But his brothers could not answer him. They're speechless. So dismayed were they at his presence. I mean, you'd think they'd be excited he's still alive. No, of course not, because they left him for dead. They're so dismayed at his presence. Then Joseph said to his brothers, come closer to me. And I can imagine them just inching closer awkwardly.
Are they doing the men's group steps with their slings just in case?
Yep.
Slowly creeping
closer. And they came closer. And he said, I am your brother Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt, as if they'd forgotten. And now this is a great thing about Joseph's going to enter into forgiveness. He, or at least this passage gets lifted up as an example of forgiveness. But notice he didn't forget.
No,
he didn't. He reminded them in the midst of this, like, we're not going to forget what happened. This is truth. And then reconciliation. Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt, and now do not be distressed or angry with yourselves because you sold me here. For God sent me before you to preserve life. For the famine has been in the land these 2 years, and there are 5 more years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvest. God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to keep alive for you many survivors. So it was not you who sent me here, but God. He has made me a father to Pharaoh and lord of all his house and ruler over all the land of Egypt. Hurry and go up to my father and say to him, thus says your son Joseph, God has made me lord of all of Egypt. Come down to
Pharaoh. Hear him say that.
I know. Come down to me. This is some bragging for dad. Just let dad know everything that I've achieved here. Come down to me. Do not delay. You shall settle in the land of Goshen, and you shall be near me. And you and your children and your children's children, as well as your flocks, your herds, and all that you have, I will provide for you there, since there are 5 more years of famine to come, so that you and your household and all that you have will not come to poverty. And he kissed all his brothers and wept upon them. And after that, his brothers talked with them. Word of God, word of life.
Whew. Thanks be to God, man.
So much past, present, and future here. Like, just the remembrance of what has happened. This present revelation. And then even the future in here where he's like, hey, everybody just come live in Egypt. And that's going to play out in, spoiler alert, the next book in the Exodus.
They do,
it's
very kind of.
Unexpected. In different ways, yeah. So just passwords are all right here. So much going on.
Such a good classic. It's kind of strange how it gets dropped on us here, that there's no – last week was Jeremiah or whatever. Like, it's not a part of a narrative, like, arc here. But it is a great story, and it's probably in WoW. That's what I call Bible Stories Volume 2 is where I would put it. and it alludes to the verse that gets said that's really powerful, that's not for five more chapters up in chapter 50, where Joseph says to his brothers, right, even though you intended it as evil for me, God intended it for good, which is the powerful line of that reading, but also in this one that that what Joseph says, right? It was not you who sent me here, but it's God who sent me here. And I think that has like the potential to be really powerful, though the careful line to walk here, I think, is avoiding everything happens for a reason sort of stuff. Like, I think it bleeds, it slips, it can slide into that really quickly, but I don't think that's what it's saying. So there's a lot of power there, but I think you got to avoid stepping in the mud.
Yeah. No, there's a ton of power. And I'm glad you raised that, because that, like, this is a perfect opportunity to tackle this. I mean, and partly because we want to unpack, like, everything happens for a reason. And the bigger problem with everything happens for a reason is partly like what it says about God, right? Mm-hmm. Where like everything happens for a reason has this like clockworker God who has already set everything up, and it's all just going to unfold in the way that like God wrote it. And that's just what's going to happen. And that's still like a very prevalent way of understanding like how the world works. But Joseph is telling like a different narrative here, where like things happen and then God responds to them. Mm-hmm. God like intervenes in all these ways, often through like the inner workings of a system, and like gets underneath things and is subversive. And God is constantly responding. So like, you did this bad thing, but God responded and did this other thing and transformed it into something different. And if God does that here, then God is going to do that again. God can do that again, like in our own lives and in our own world. And so I think it also just paints a very different picture of who God is. If that's part of what we're doing in preaching, is painting a picture of who God is, this gives us a really great opportunity to paint that picture.
Yeah, for sure, Matt. Like, I think it's God can work with our ridiculousness, which, you know, having this, talking about this text right after talking about the righteous gemstones, you know, as you've kind of said a couple of times now, right? Like, I would not make any of the choices that they make in ministry, essentially. And yet this text says that I have to hold out some hope that God might still find a way to work through those ridiculous people who make horrific choices over and over again. God might be able to take the stuff that they do not intend for good so often, and yet it might be intended for evil, or flippy floppy.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff. It's here, like you said, it's not, we're not in semi-continuous working up to this, but it will tie in a little bit to the gospel. But it kind of tells a story. I mean, if you need a story to preach on this week, this is where you're going to find it.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus is going to give you some aphorisms.
Well, Matt, I think that means it's time for the Adam Burnt epistle reading of the week, which is continuing to move through 1 Corinthians. I'm not going to read it out loud because we're not making that kind of concession, Matt, but we are addressing it. And it's kind of typical Paul. It's pretty good, especially towards like what I had kind of talked about in the past couple of weeks. Someone will ask, how are the dead raised? What kind of body do they come from? Fool, what you sow does not come to life unless it dies. You do not sow the body that is to be, but a bare seed, perhaps of wheat or some other grain. But God gives it a body as he's chosen, and to each kind of seed its own body. I love that. God, you do not sow a body that is to be. I actually do like that, Matt. I like that metaphor of the seed is not what it will be. And so I think that's a pretty has the potential to be pretty powerful kind of resurrection sorts of promises in all the parts of our lives. And the hope for what is to come. It also sounds a lot like, as you go on, it sounds like another one of our HBO mini shows that we've had here on the podcast. It sounds like the people, you know, the water people who say, what's dead may never die, which is a bit of what is going on there. It gets in a little dualistic in the second chunk of it, Matt, where he's talking about the, you know, flesh is bad and spirituality and spirit bodies are better. But I probably wouldn't preach a ton on that, but I like that first part. The seed.
Yeah, the man of it's. I mean, it's funny. We get this in the weeks leading up to Ash Wednesday. We're getting closer and closer. And we get the man of dust. There's a lot of dust in here, too. Mm-hmm. But it is weirdly dualistic.
Don't love that part.
I do like that there's like a little, I don't know that I think the epistle is kind of semi-continuous, if I remember correctly. I think it's kind of semi-continuous in this season. But it does kind of tie in if we're going to think about what happened. I mean, there is a resurrection. Joseph.
Wait, spoilers.
To his brothers, Joseph was,
no,
was dead and is alive. And you could also just look at the reconciliation as a form of resurrection. Yeah. And so we get that kind of death and resurrection thing going on in 1 Corinthians, which gives us another angle into what's happening in Genesis. And maybe in Luke.
Bingo, bango. Luke continues on Sermon on the Plain. Jesus says, I say to you that, listen, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, pray for those who abuse you. If anyone strikes you on the cheek, offer the other also. And from anyone who takes away your coat, do not withhold even your undershirt. Give to everyone who begs from you. And if anyone takes away your goods, do not ask for them again. Do to others as you would have them do to you. For if you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? Because that's who Jesse Jenstone loves. For even sinners love those who love them. If you do to those who do good to you, what credit is that to you? For sinners like Jesse Jenstone, do the same. And if you lend to those from whom you hope to receive, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners to receive as much again. But love your enemies, do good, and lend, expecting nothing in return. And that is the basis of the modern economy. That lending, expecting nothing in return, is the economic system upon which the Western world has built our society. Because our reward will be great when we do that, and we'll be children of the Most High, for as kind to the ungrateful and the wicked. Be merciful, just as your Father is merciful. Do not judge, and you will not be judged. Do not condemn, and you will not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven. Give, and it will be given unto you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, will be put in your lap. Like, take that champagne bottle, shake it up, and stick it in your lap, and pop it open. For the measure you give will be the measure you get back. The good news of Jesus.
Praise to you, O Christ.
Not a story, Matt, which is always kind of a bummer. But Jesus, you know, deeply getting into the honor shame stuff here and is encouraging people to engage in particularly shameful behavior. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who abuse you. I've talked about on the podcast 20 to 30 times probably than the ancient Near East. A significant issue, social issue, was that eye for an eye was considered not just the right thing to do, but the honorable thing to do. And so it led to these family feuds that would disrupt society. And so that's a part of what Jesus is addressing here. And so Jesus is not only suggesting, but saying that the way forward is to engage in the very shameful behavior of not exacting revenge when something bad happens to you from outside of your walls. And that is super Lucan and continues the Lucan theme Beatitudes last week of flipping everything on its head and suggesting that the most honorable thing to do is actually the thing that you would think is the most shameful thing to do.
Amen. Yeah, there's a lot of finding power in the unexpected and turning things upside down. All of that.
Yeah, it's good. It's good.
Lots to work with this week.
I agree. That's the good content where people come here for to hear us say, yeah, that's pretty good. We all agree.
Pretty good stuff.
It's good stuff.
And Jesus is something. He's not a something.
Yeah, he might have something here. Yeah. Love the haters. That works, you know. It's pretty anti-social media, the way the algorithms have conditioned us to hate the people who do not love us. But I wonder, yeah, my critique of the reading is that we slide into a bit of a little like karmic economy kind of deal, right? Where like, spoilers, I'm going to use the New Radical song, You Get What You Give, which I think the promise of God is more than that. That's one of the things I've been working with our student preachers. One of them has the good news statement that God balances things out, coming off of the Beatitudes. And I think that's true, but I don't think it's as simple as God just like evens the scales out, you know, that there's something else there that should pull us more deep, like move us more deeply into the mystery of what God is up to and about.
Yeah. I mean, it does take a great deal of, faith, because this actually isn't how it works, right?
Like, yeah, it has nothing to do with reality.
You could try it. Mm-hmm. You'd probably still be judged. The measure you give will be the measure you get back. I mean, sometimes it's not comforting to think that, but it doesn't always happen. And so, like, it definitely takes a great deal of faith, right, to be like, no, I'm gonna live as if this were true. And then we have to kind of figure out, like, what is that? I mean, one way of interpreting that is like, yep. And then when I die, I'm gonna get all those rewards in heaven. And that would be one way to think about it. And we could both and that. You could say yes and. But there's got to be something. There's got to be more power than that, I feel like, for our present reality. And I think you gotta, like you said, you live it into the mystery. I mean, I think even this, it's easy to nod your head at first read.
Like we both
first
did.
Hearing in church, mm-hmm. and be like, yeah, that sounds right. Yeah, that's the measure you get back.
Jesus, playing
and
the hits.
You start thinking here. About it, and you're like, I don't know.
Well, here's I'm going to let our listeners in on a couple things here, Matt. Some premium content for free. This is the kind of stuff normally only Patreon subscribers get. But number one, Matt, I don't know if I talked about it on the podcast, but I'm a Hoosier now. Big fan of John Cougar Mellencamp. I have enrolled at Indiana University. I'm doing the Lake Institute's executive certificate in religious fundraising. And actually, Matt, it's not true, right? What it says here, that you get what you give is what it says. And that is not true. And it's not true in a bunch of different ways. One of the ways that it's not true is that studies show that people actually do get more positive emotional like vibes and stuff from giving than they do from receiving. So there is like complexity here. There are a lot of different ways that it's not true. And part of those are unexpected and full of the mystery in that, you actually get much more when you give. So if you're looking to make a stewardship sermon out of this, there you go.
There you go. Way to bring in. You didn't know you're getting like, you thought you were just getting preaching tips, but you're getting all the things that Zach is learning.
This is turning into a stewardship generosity podcast where I'm going to tell you all the secrets to make this fall stewardship. What if we did? What if we did like a premium vinyl stewards thing? That's what we should do. Where I take Lake Institute content, rebrand it, and sell it for us.
But give it a shot.
Because we believe in the generosity and abundance of God. We share these copyrighted resources as our own.
That's right. Good stuff. Well,
here's the other factoid. You ready for this factoid that blew my mind, Matt?
Yeah.
Is that so I had this first idea, right, that like people's ownership and like investment in our ministry that drove giving, right? So I was thinking we needed to find ways to increase people's ownership and investment in our ministry because then we could get greater gifts to come out of it. But it's backwards that studies show that people express the most ownership and investment in the things that they give to. Right. And so like the best way to get ownership and investment out of people is to get them to give or for you to like, if you want to invest in something, like have ownership over like a ministry, a thing is to give to it. And so like, wow.
Wow.
You get what you give. I guess that's what it, you give what you give. I don't know. I got to work on how to phrase that, but I was really blown away by that. And that the ownership and investment that the people who support our community have, I think, come because of, even if they haven't been financial donors, right, but like alumni and stuff, it's because of what they gave to the ministry when they were here with us, when they were part of the community. Mm-hmm. That's where their ownership and investment comes from, not just because they received meals and they received the community and they received housing, but because of the giving that they did in the place. And that's from where – that's the place that their ownership and investment comes from. And I know that's somewhat pretty tangential, but I feel like you could weave it in. If I had thought about it ahead of time, I could have done some of that work for you. But our listeners are smart, you know, so – They're Christian thought leaders.
Christian thought leaders.
Which is one of the labels never used to describe the New Radicals, Matt, who had a killer music video for You You Get What You Give, which include the bucket hat. And that dude has stuck to the bucket hat for decades. He's still rocking the bucket hat and his flare jeans. Matt, so on the playlist this week, I'm putting You Get What You Give by the New Radicals on there.
Fun fact, your new favorite artist, U2, they wish they'd written that song. That's an actual quote from The Edge. That was the one song they wish they'd written.
You Get What You Give. 100% believe it. I believe it. It sounds like early 2000s U2. And is in a shopping mall. Bono probably wouldn't have done the video in the shopping mall. But along those lines, Matt, I am going to go ahead and do The End by the Beatles, which, again, I don't agree with. In the end, you get the love you get is the love you make. Make the love you take is the love you make. That sort of thing. It fits the text, so you can listen to it, but don't preach it. And finally, I love that line that Joseph cries onto his brothers. There is one of my first significant exposure to Motown was through, of course, the Columbia House CD club, when accidentally I got sent an opening Did Not Return, the two-set soundtrack to The Big Chill, which included Smokey Robinson's Tracks of My Tears, which is so good. People say I'm the life of the party.
Oh, yeah, The Big Chill soundtrack. My parents had that.
So good.
That was a classic. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Forgotten about it. Oof.
What are you listening to, man?
I'm thinking about those brothers. Those brothers in that first reading. So I got a bunch of brothers artists. I'll put on Black Water by the Doobie Brothers.
Mm. I've been to their winery. Classic. It's lovely. It's in Sonoma County.
Really?
What's it called? Cone. BR Cone is owned by the Doobie Brothers.
Oh. Interesting. I wonder if it's close to Dave Matthews Winery.
One day, me, you. Fun fact, I got a Dave Matthews nugget. I got to drop, Matt. I'm sorry. Friend of the podcast, Sean Nesbitt, texted me this week because he has a high schooler kid. And he's like, Ephraim asked me this week if Johnny Cash's Live from Folsom Prison was filmed in Boulder or was recorded in Boulder.
What?
Because the football stadium's Folsom Field, like the Dave Matthews Live from Folsom Field. And so I texted back like, oh, I love that, because I think I wore out at least one Live from Folsom Field album. And then he's like, yeah, that was me and my wife's first date, was to go to Live at Folsom Field, that Dave show. So,
wow.
So cool. I was so jealous.
Amazing. Well, as I've got, Blackwater by the Doobie Brothers. I Am Loving You by the Avid Brothers. Mm. And one more. Only Human by the Jonas Brothers. Just
love
wish
it.
We were friends.
Just wish. Oh my gosh. So good, man.
Well, it's been real.
It's been real righteous.